What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do I? All I need is love.
From the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Haiti's President Jean-Bertrand Aristide resigned and flew into exile Sunday, pressured by a bloody rebellion in the United States. Gunfire crackled as the capital fell into chaos and U.S. Marines arrived in the country. A contingent of fewer than 100 Marines arrived Sunday, and more were to arrive today. They were the vanguard of a multinational force that the UN Security Council approved late Sunday night, and France said it would send troops today. Aristide's whereabouts were uncertain late Sunday, with officials saying his jet stopped to refuel in the Caribbean island of Antigua. A senior Caribbean community official said Aristide told him during the refueling stop he was bound for South Africa. Two American brothers arrested in the Philippines last year for alleged ties to Al-Qaeda-linked groups have been deported to the United States. Michael Ray Stubbs of Antioch, California, and his brother James of Newark, New Jersey, were arrested in December and ordered deported. Authorities alleged that James Stubbs met with members of Muslim extremist group Abu Sayyaf, as well as the separatist Moro Islamic Liberation Front. The brothers had been under surveillance at the time of their arrest and had entered the country on tourist visas, but they also carried documents indicating that they were soliciting funds to build Muslim schools and mosques. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez railed against the Bush administration on Sunday in a speech before tens of thousands of supporters, accusing it of meddling in Venezuelan affairs and supporting anti-government forces trying to remove him from office. Mr. Chavez, whose language has become increasingly hostile in the face of American support for a recall referendum, warned that if the Bush administration carried out what he called American aggressions, the people of the United States should know that they will not get another drop of oil from Venezuela. Iraq's governing council has agreed on an interim constitution, marking a crucial step in Washington's plan to hand sovereignty back to Iraqis. A spokesman announced that Islam will be the official religion of the state and it will be a source of legislation, and that the law will say to respect Islam as the religion of the majority. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A $10,000 reward offered by the Doonesbury comic strip for proof that George W. Bush served in the Alabama National Guard during the Vietnam War has elicited over 1,300 responses but turned up no credible evidence yet, said Gary Trudeau on Friday. Trudeau said he planned to pay the $10,000 from his own money, saying, "What else am I going to do with a huge tax cut that I don't need?" For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Tricky Dick had nothing on Tricky George. Nixon mostly played his tricks in politics, but Bush is even more dangerous, for he routinely plays his tricks in government. Most famous, of course, is his always-shifting Find the Weapons of Mass Destruction game, which already has killed more than 500 Americans, wounded 3,000 more, and caused untold numbers of casualties among innocent Iraqis. But he's quite a trickster here at home, too, ranging from his forest of environmental deceptions to his ludicrous claims that job growth will mushroom if only the CEOs and millionaire investors can get more tax breaks. Then there's his budgetary hocus-pocus, where he pretends to pull an elephant out of a hat. Even though he lards his latest budget with more than $500 billion for the military, billions more in special tax giveaways to his wealthy supporters, and a multi-billion-dollar annual prescription drug boondoggle for the drug giants, he claims that his magic budget will cut the ballooning federal deficit in half. It won't, of course, as practically all independent economists agree, but what it does is to give Bush cover for slashing spending on programs that benefit us middle and low-income people. Having frittered away the bulk of the public treasury, Bush suddenly has turned tight-fisted, saying, "We're calling upon Congress to be wise with the taxpayers' money." Among his cuts, school dropout prevention, work training grants, nurse training, rural firefighters, medical research for veterans, lead prevention in children, prison rape prevention, modernizing air controller systems, EPA's Clean Water Fund, modernizing the IRS to pursue corporate tax cheats, small business microloans, CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, state and local law enforcement assistance, college tuition grants, violent crime programs, and after-school care for children. This is Jim Hightower saying Bush's budget is class warfare, enriching the super rich at the expense of the rest of us.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
Can that be definitely hot?
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello?
Oh, no, a runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpeting.
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way. It's Tom Hartman, and we're back in the saddle again, as the old song goes. Still running, still going. Special greetings to our friends all across the nation. Oh, and Nalodia says KTRC hasn't picked. We got a couple of stations that are still struggling with automation equipment here, satellites and this and that and the other thing. But anyhow, we will be on all our affiliates. No doubt we are now on the vast majority of them. I know of one station that is having a satellite receiver problem. But they say that they will have that fixed in the next day or so if you are listening on the web stream. Anyhow, and our web stream has moved over to radiopower.org. Those of us who are the web listeners have already figured that out. But welcome back to our program. John Edwards, Campaign Saturday in Georgia. Oh, by the way, let me give you our new toll-free number. You write it down. And, in fact, give me a call anytime here during the show, particularly during this first segment, because John Hosford, our genius engineer, is here in the studio, and we're fiddling with the Gentner phone equipment, you know, to make sure that all the volumes and levels and gains and everything are right. So the new 800 number is 1-866-889-8894. I'll give that to you again. It's also on our website. If you go to tomhartman.com and click the show home or the listen live segment, you'll find it. But it's 1-866, which is a toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894.
So give us a call, let us know you're hearing the show, and that all is well. And if there's anything in particular you'd like to talk about, did you see the debates over the weekend? I had to settle for the clips. We spent the whole weekend playing with automation software to get the show here together for today. It seems that John Edwards might have blown his opportunities to be Kerry's running mate. Well, you never know. You know, people. What was it? Dan Quayle and George Bush. No, it wasn't Quayle and Bush. Bush and Reagan. George Bush Sr. went after Ronald Reagan like a pit bull way back when. And that didn't seem to be a problem. So, you know, we'll see how things work out. Anyhow, John Edwards campaigns Saturday in Georgia. This is Georgia, of course, in the South. Super Tuesday is tomorrow. And Edwards campaigning in Georgia, that's his big hope. If John Edwards doesn't at least win Georgia, he's toast. He's gone. And frankly, I think that in order for him to stay in this race, he's going to have to take Georgia and at least one or two other states. And perhaps Ohio. Maybe Minnesota. But I frankly, I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. I mean, you're looking at the polls and frankly looking at the difference between the candidates and Democrats this time around. Sure, see, looking from the outside in, I'm not part of the Democratic Party, and I've not been to any insider meetings or anything like that. Don't really know what's going on the inside there. But from the outside looking in, and from talking to all the Democrats that I know, and independents and Greens, and here in Vermont, it's the Progressive Party. We don't have much of a Green Party here in Vermont, but the Progressive Party has done just a great job of pulling votes. And in fact, such a great job that we have a Republican governor and a Republican, lieutenant governor? Is that it, John? That's the title. Number two guy. Neither one of which got more than 50% of the vote because the Greens and the progressives and the Democrats split the vote. But anyhow, folks of all political stripes seem to be just absolutely united in the idea that they want to get somebody in who is capable of defeating George Bush, somebody who's going to do good enough to get him out. So we'll see. The Edwards campaign manager, Nick Baldick, was talking to reporters, and he said he thinks that the DNIACs, the support of DNIACs, is going to be critical right now. In states that are close, they're going to make a huge difference. But the question is, frankly, I don't think it's going to translate. I don't think that the passion and energy that the DNIACs brought to the campaign is going to migrate automatically to John Edwards. I think that those folks were so motivated by the motivation and the anti-motivation. There's the powerful anti-motivation of seeing the damage that George W. Bush has done to our environment, basically putting the White House up for sale to the highest bidder. I mean, even those of us who are fully in favor of business, I mean, I run a business, I've run many businesses in my life, many of us say, you know, hey, business is a good thing, we need business in America. And there is a point, and going all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, patriots and politicians and political scientists have been pointing out that business should be in the business of making money, not making policy, not making public policy, not determining what the future of the United States should be. And that, you know, we've got this strange twisting that is happening. You know, we've talked about this in other programs, and in fact, I want to get into it a little more in some detail this first hour here today. The situation where corporations start participating in governance, and, you know, is that a good thing or not? I frankly think not. So you've got the DNIACs who are concerned about the toxicity, as it were, of the Bush administration. And then you've got the DNIACs who were really in love with Howard Dean's positions, who thought that Howard Dean, Louise, I see you've got line one George in Birmingham, but it looks like he's dropped there. The light's not lit up on the Gettin or something. And then you've got the DNIACs who were saying, we like his idea about, you know, essentially a single payer health care, working toward it. We like his ideas about, you know, with regard to trade. We like his and so on. And so you got the issues guys, and you've got the anti-Bush guys, people. I grew up in Michigan. Guys is a generic term. Refers to male, female, and all variations thereof. And frankly, I don't think that the DENIACs who are of the anybody but Bush variety are necessarily going to migrate to Edwards. And I think that they're going to end up going with whoever they think is most electable. And the media has been spinning this thing. And John Kerry, to give him credit, has been winning these primaries with or without the media. You can get into conspiracy theory here if you want or not. But I suspect that Kerry's going to pick up at least as many of them. And Edwards' great hope may or may not turn out to be a great hope. 1-866-889-8894 is our number, and Glenn in Tulsa is on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Assuming, well, it doesn't matter which Democrat gets this, they're going to get painted with so much slime, it's going to be unbelievable. I had a cousin who was a righty, a religious fundamentalist, who had been entertaining the idea that, because he's in a telephone workers union, that Bush was bad for unions, but it doesn't take care of the poor and all that. And he agrees with all that. And he says, I got an email back. I may be displeased with President Bush's track record on spending, labor issues, illegal immigrants, but the Democrats need to come up with a better candidate than this. One more queer-loving, baby-killing coward won't get my vote. What a quandary this nation is in. I mean, what are we going to do with these people? Write them off.
I know. It's welcome to America and the great American debate, Glenn. It's a tough one.
Then he sent me an email, with the reasons why Senator Kerry was Hanoi John and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've been getting those, too. You're seeing the leading edge of the right-wing attack. And this is what the Bush campaign is going to be. It's like in North Carolina or South Carolina, I forget which, during the primaries 4 years ago when it looked like John McCain was going to beat George W. Bush. And George W. Bush did a push poll where they went in and they started calling people and asking them if you knew that John McCain had a baby out of wedlock with a black woman, how would that affect your vote? This in South Carolina, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, after 20,000-30,000 of these phone calls to registered Republican voters, Bush's numbers in the Republican primary started looking good, and he won that state based on that. And that's why John McCain to this day won't talk to George Bush, or at least not in a very friendly fashion. I mean, they smile together for photo ops and things.
Why can't we do our own push polling? Just get dirty with them. I mean, we can't just roll over and play dead.
Well, I am hopeful, frankly. Number one, I would never condone that kind of politics. That kind of just absolutely down in the mud, telling lies politics, which was the hallmark of the early Bush campaign 4 years ago, and which was also done by his father back during the campaign against Dukakis. I would never condone that. But I do think that attacks need to be forcefully met, and that's what Howard Dean brought to this. John Kerry was not forcefully meeting these attacks before, and he is now. And I think that's a fine thing. Glenn, I got to move along.
Okay,
I got another call here. Thanks for calling and letting me know also that our web stream is, you're listening on radiopower.org, I assume, if you're in Tulsa,
yeah,
Oklahoma.
Right.
Great, that's working too. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Glenn. I appreciate it. Okay, 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. And next on the line is Steve in Oklahoma. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Steve?
All right. I was wanting to get your take on a Tom Friedman article I read in the New York Times over the weekend, where he was claiming that we are more secure because of the jobs that have gone to the India and Pakistan.
I know. It's actually part of a series of two, and I've got one of them in my stack here. I was going to dissect it. He goes in and he goes into this in the first article that he ran, which I think was in Thursday's New York Times last week. He goes into one of these. I think it's 24/7 is the actual name of the company. One of these call centers in India, and he says, "Well, look at this. They're drinking Coke. Their air conditioners are made by Carrier." And he names four or five what seem like American brand name products. And he says, "Isn't this wonderful? I mean, mean, even though they're answering phones here in India, they're buying American products. But the fact of the matter is that it's an Indian Coke vendor, that the Carrier air conditioning equipment is actually made in Taiwan. Carrier closed their factory. In fact, they're closing one of their last factories in Michigan right now. And on it goes. Tom Friedman has a huge investment in, he wrote The Olive Tree and the Lexus. You know, he's got this huge intellectual and emotional and probably a financial investment. I mean, he's part of the elite, as it were, in the idea of what is called free trade, which basically means free for corporations. We put up barriers for human beings, but we let corporations do whatever they want. Corporation doesn't need a passport to cross the border. You and I do. Corporation doesn't need to get permission from another country or a visa to get it. You and I do. I mean, it's outrageous. And Tom Friedman is... unfortunately, promoting this myth and doing it in such a frankly an ineffective way, Steve. I'm just astounded. I mean, couldn't you just read it and see that this is nonsense?
Well, I've never been a fan of Friedman's, but that one just drove me crazy that he would say that it's helping us.
Yeah.
To give our jobs away.
Yeah, he's just nuts. He's just wrong. Just absolutely wrong. Steve, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Tom Hartman, and it's 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio stations with my mind on you.
Well, welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 25 minutes past the hour.
The pill that will help you escape the matrix.
10 states are voting tomorrow. It's Super Tuesday. California, Connecticut, Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Ohio, Rhode Island, and Vermont. I live here in Vermont. I'll be voting. Howard Dean is still on the ballot here. And he has said to Vermonters that they can vote for Vermonters. By doing so, we help him carry more delegates into the convention. So I think I'll probably vote for him. We'll see. But it looks like it's going to be a coronation coming up, which in a way is kind of a shame. It means it's like the end of the free publicity for the Democrats. Because once John Kerry is, you know, clearly the guy, then, you know, it's just going to boogie on. 1-800-1-866-889-8894 is our number, 1-866-889-8894, and I believe this is Carol in Georgia is on the line. Hey, Carol, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
What's up?
Well, first I wanted to tell you that I am a DMEAC. I went to all the meetups and went to the MUBON websites and the Dean websites and made the donations and all that stuff, and I still feel bad that Dean was not the choice, but I don't happen to think that he's mean enough.
Yeah, mean enough?
Mean enough.
Yeah.
Or perhaps a better word would have been underhanded or double talking enough, maybe?
Yeah, politician enough. I frankly thought he wasn't, that there was a part of him that wasn't quite ready for prime time in that he was too, plain spoken, honest? I mean, you know, when
absolutely.
He...
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Too open to what his feelings were.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he, on Chris Matthews, when he said he would break up the big media conglomerates.
Absolutely.
I thought, okay, Howard, you're toast. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's sad. In fact, I wrote an op-ed piece for Common Dreams about that, and I never published it because I was afraid it would become a self-fulfilling prophecy. It concerned me.
Yeah, and you know, I saw that interview, and you heard the comment and went, "Uh-oh." You realize you're on the network that you're trying to tell you're going to kick them out.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell you, I'm going to vote for Edwards tomorrow.
And why Edwards rather than Kerry?
Well, for several reasons.
Than Kucinich or Sharpton, for that matter. I mean. Yeah.
Well, because I think Sharpton was an absolutely excellent entertainer. I think he kept the debates very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he even believed that he was going to be president.
Yeah.
Kucinich is a little bit too far out there. The general public is not ready for the kind of radical changes that he's proposing.
Yeah.
And Edwards, for several reasons, I really do believe that he would be the better candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ruffles a little less easy than Kerry does.
Yeah.
And whether anybody wants to admit it or not, that big smile does make a difference. I'm old enough to remember Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, so you think that John Kerry is just a little too much of a cold fish to be politically appealing?
No, I'm talking about the difference between the two candidates.
Right. And Edwards just he emotes warmth.
I just think that he has... They talk all the time about charisma, and I think he has.
Yeah.
Now, there is, I told you, a couple of reasons. There is yet another reason.
Well, we're running out of time, so it better be quick,
okay.
Carol.
I want to keep this going for longer because you said it before. It leaves the media when this goes away.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Good one. Carol in Georgia, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Have a good one. This is Tom Harbin. It's 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the middle of a vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations and stay tuned. We'll be back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Competition has driven some fisheries into deep trouble. An author sees a sustainable alternative. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Shrinking ocean fisheries are forcing ever tougher competition for what remains. Rod Fujita says that's pushed many fish species to dangerously low numbers. Fujita is the author of a new book called Heal the Ocean.
Nobody owns the fish, so nobody's responsible for them. And that sets up a vicious competition amongst individual fishermen and amongst countries to maximize their share of the catch, which is unspecified. They don't really know how much they're entitled to. So they build large fleets and subsidize them and try to create more powerful gear to catch as much as they can.
Fujita says high-tech fishing equipment and government subsidies are symptoms of a system gone awry. And he says blanket quotas for cod and other species only heated up the competition among fleets. Fujita says the answer lies in two bold steps: creating marine reserves where fishing is banned and in establishing specific catch allowances. He says each country and even individual fishing boats need to know how many fish they can catch each season.
The solution really is to specify use privileges for both individuals and countries so that people will know how much they're entitled to. It can be a percentage of the total allowable catch, for example. And once people have that share in hand, they can plan their businesses around that share rather than planning it around competition.
More than 90 of the world's fisheries are now covered by these individual. Fish Columbia manages 25 Pacific fish species that way, and Fujita says the results have been good for conservation and for the fishing industry. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council. We'll be right back.
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The salesman relaxed with a few pints of beer, and he tried not to speak about trade. The poet won't write any verses tonight. He may sing a sweet serenade. So pull off a chair and forget about life. It's a good thing to do now and then. And if you like it here, I have an idea. Tomorrow, let's all meet again.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And you remember Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel Award-winning economist in 2001? He won the Nobel Prize. He used to work for the World Bank, and he wrote a brilliant expose of the World Bank, one that I think is very concerning to a lot of people. And he's the co-author now of a report that just came out. Called A Fair Globalization. Not the co-author. He's one of 20 officials and experts who produced this thing. And the report found, this is from the New York Times, an article by Elizabeth Becker called Globalization Study Finds Gap Widening Between Rich and Poor. And it's not what people fail to get is that this isn't the problem. This is the symptom of the problem. We'll get to the problem in just a minute, but let's just look at the symptom for a moment. The report found that 188 million people are unemployed worldwide, or 6.2% of the labor force. The gap between the rich and poor nations has widened, with countries representing 14% of the world's population, accounting for half the world's trade and foreign investment. That in the developing world, this, you know, the countries that are coming to industry, the places where our jobs are going, that's a fancy way of saying the developing world, right? Women have been harmed more than men by globalization. The report also said that women's traditional livelihoods as subsistence farmers or small producers have been undermined by foreign subsidized agriculture, particularly American. I mean, agriculture is, even the Europeans are upset about this. But this is the thing. We give billions of dollars. I mean, literally. It's like literally tens of billions of dollars. More welfare in the United States in direct grants, in direct payments, goes to multinational corporations that control agriculture in the United States. Forget about family farms. More government money goes to multinational corporations that control agriculture in the United States in the form of essentially welfare payments than goes to all the human beings in the United States. Add up all your welfare moms, you know, driving around in their Cadillacs, to use Ronald Reagan's tired old cliche that has never been found to be true. Add up all your welfare moms, all your single-parent families, all your people on public assistance, all your foods, to add it all up. And it doesn't equal the billions that go just into agriculture. And what is that money doing? Well, it's allowing us to produce, in particular, corn really cheap, but also soybeans, cotton, and other crops. And our corn, our subsidized corn, is so cheap that when that corn gets dumped on international markets, it causes American corn in countries like Guatemala and Mexico, and well, all over the world. But I mean, you know, the countries closest to us have been feeling the effects the hardest. I saw this when I was in Colombia, when I was in Bogota, Colombia, back 10 years ago or so. I wrote about it in a book called The Prophet's Way. That there was we set up a program in the La Paz slum in Bogota for the street children there. And there were literally millions of people living in these little cardboard shanty houses or asbestos roofing that they had made these things out of, sheets of asbestos. You know, living four, five, six people in a little square just to keep the rain out that was the size maybe 10 by 10 at the most. They were bootlegging electricity occasionally. The middle of the street was an open running sewer. And why had all these people come into the city? Most of them were subsistence farmers. They were people who were out in the countryside, and they had been for hundreds of years, for thousands of years, for generations, making a living as subsistence farmers. And selling their products in the nearby small towns and villages and even in the big city. And one of the main products that they grew, that everybody grew, was corn. And what happened was that the American corn came in so cheaply that these people couldn't afford, they couldn't afford to compete with our corn. So they just packed it in. So what happened was that they became poorer and poorer and poorer, and finally large multinational corporations came in and said, hey, we'll buy your land. In many cases, actually, it wasn't even large multinational corporations. It was one of the 32 or 36 families that control more than, yeah, I don't have the numbers right in front of you, but it's under 40 families control roughly 70 to 80% of the wealth of the nation of Colombia. And this is not unusual in South America. And it's increasingly not unusual in the United States. So anyhow, what happens is that these people, they can't make a living on the farm anymore, so they go to the big city in search of work. And they become a pool of labor available to huge multinational corporations who are looking for cheap labor. And they're desperate to work. And that's where our jobs are going. And so you see this roundabout thing? We are supporting the exports of our jobs by supporting our own agriculture. So anyhow, back to this report by Stiglitz and Company. Women's traditional livelihoods as subsistence farmers or small producers have been undermined by foreign subsidized agriculture and foreign impact or foreign imports. But as women, they face cultural barriers when looking for alternative occupations. In a lot of these countries, there are no laws that protect against discrimination against women. In fact, I remember the local guy that we were working with in Bogota. He owned a small business in Bogota, and just one of those funny memories you have. We went to his club for lunch one day, and his secretary was with us. She told us some interesting stories about an Indian tribe up in the countryside that I wrote about in one of my books. I think it was in The Prophet's Way or Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, I remember he was running an ad in the newspaper, and because I remember it because it struck me. The ad said, woman wanted for secretary for his business. He was looking for a secretary, you know, somebody to answer the phone and thing. But it started out, woman wanted. And I remember in the 1950s and in the early 1960s, there was that category of ads in the help wanted ads here in the United States. You'd see in the help wanted ad, you know, men wanted, women wanted, in the help wanted ads. Well, this is illegal now in the United States. But it's not in most of these other countries, and so women face this glass ceiling, and it's a very, very, very low ceiling in the third world. So the report goes on, within some rich nations, the United States, Britain, and Canada, the gap between rich and poor has grown wider as well. The United States posted the greatest gap, bigger than Canada, bigger than Great Britain. The United States posted the greatest gap, with the top 1% earning 17% of the gross income. You get this? The top 1% of Americans are earning 17% of all the money that gets earned in the United States. According to this report, the last time that level was seen was in the 1920s. Now, again, I'm not opposed to people making money, and I'm not even opposed to people being incredibly wealthy. But there is a certain point, as Thomas Jefferson pointed out over and over and over again in his letters, and as economists have been telling us throughout the centuries, and as we saw so clearly through the presidencies of Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover, who basically said, let government get out of the way, let business run things. Well, business did run things, and what it did was it created a class of extreme wealth and people who were the working, it wiped out the middle class. It wiped out the middle class and brought us the Great Depression. And that's the core of the conservative agenda. That's the core of conservative economics. And you're seeing it played out. I mean, you know, what George Bush is doing, he's doing us a great favor. What George Bush is doing is he's saying, hey, here's what we're all about. Just to remind you, our new phone number here on the Tom Hartman program, 1-866-889-8894. 1-866-889-8894. I'll be saying it a lot. It doesn't mean I'm begging for calls because I'm on a good rant here. But I, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, the IE America Radio Network is no more. Our program is continuing. We're still on the stations all across the country and on the Sirius satellite, stream 143, and beaming around the world from radiopower.org. And apparently, Shoutcast and whatnot. I'm not sure how all it's getting out there in the world. Anyhow, in the world's 30th nations, In addition to that spread being the greatest since the 1920s, according to this study, they go on to say in the world's 30 wealthiest nations, the average level of corporate tax, now this is over 30 nations, the average level of corporate tax in the last six years, the average level of corporate tax fell from 37.6% to 30.8% in 2003. Now, what's interesting is in the United States, it has gone from 16% to around 7%. That's not the tax rate, but that's the actual amount of tax that's paid. And you've got Greenspan being on the record as saying he doesn't think corporations should pay any taxes at all. And corporations, and again, as I said, I own a small business. I mean, this radio show is a small business. I started an ad agency in Atlanta. I started a travel company. I ran an herbal tea company. I've started a number of companies over the years, many of which are still doing very well. In the nonprofit arena, Louise and I started a community for abused kids in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village. It's still there in Rumney, New Hampshire. 26 years later, it's one of the largest and most well-considered homes for communities for abused kids in the state. We started the Hunter School for ADHD kids. I understand business. And I know from starting businesses, and some of these businesses, have done fairly well. I mean, the travel agency, for example, we started in 83, we sold it in 86. Last year, they did $24 million in business. I should have kept it, right? But the point is, I understand business, and I understand that if you're running a business, you are depending on the infrastructure of the community. I see we've got a caller on line one. We'll get to you in just a second here. I understand that if you have a business, that businesses require an educated labor force. We're paying for that with our taxes, for our public education. Businesses require roads for people to travel on to get to their place of work. Businesses require, it's just some very straightforward requirements. They require sewer. They require police protection. They require fire protection. They require a court system that works so that they can enforce contracts. Businesses require all these things. Why shouldn't they pay the taxes to help this happen? 1-866-889-8894. And I'm just going to pop this line on the air and say, hello, caller.
Joe from Brookings, Oregon.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah. Speaking of the developing world, I called up to talk about Haiti. Part of the stuff I see in the media, Haiti, why they have problems down there. They're supposed to be lazy and shiftless and nothing but a bunch of troublemakers down there, and it's hardly ever mentioned in the mainstream media that, our interference with that country the past 200 years.
Yeah, and the lazy shiftless stuff is a recycling of it's code words for racism.
Oh.
Basically. This is racist code language. The bottom line is that for a democracy to work, and this was something that the founders of this country understood so well, for a democracy to work, there are a couple of essential ingredients. And one is that you have to have an educated populace. People actually have to be educated. And secondly, you have to have something that resembles a middle class. You have to have a large enough number of people who aren't just absolutely starving and desperate that they will do anything or that they will resort to crime, that you can have a decent standard of life. And without those two things, you can't have democracy. And when you go into a country, when you interfere, if you're going to do nation building, as it were, as we've tried to do in Haiti a couple of times, as we're planning on doing in Iraq, you've got to make sure that those two things are in place first. And Haiti has never really gotten their educational act together. I went down there back about 10 years ago or so, along with Herr Mueller, the founder of this German charity that I've worked with for 25 years, to talk with them about setting up a program in Haiti. A community for orphans and abused kids and whatnot. And we met with, Joe, we met with the director, the national director of education, like the equivalent of Rod Page, like the Secretary of Education.
Yeah.
And this guy's biggest concern was how much of a bribe we were going to give him. I mean, that was the main issue. And so there's a fundamental problem there. And, you know, the institutions were failing. And so what you're seeing right now is, like, it shouldn't be a surprise. Because if you're going to intervene, you can intervene militarily after the fact, or it's like preventative stuff. It's like you can do Head Start and you can teach kids, or you can end up with a whole lot of people who are in prison. Your choice. The same thing with foreign aid and other nations, particularly nations at your doorstep like Haiti. If you want to help them out, help their educational systems and help their legal systems and help build a middle class. Help them create a business infrastructure, and then you will have the substrate upon which democracy can be formed.
And look how we treat their refugees as compared to Cuba. If you're a political refugee from Cuba and your name is Tony Montana, well, then we just love to have you. But, you know, you come up from Haiti, well, then you can go straight to hell.
Yeah, and again, politics is at play there, probably racism is at play, but I'd say more than that, it has to do with the fact that this is a vestige of the Cold War, that Castro is still communist, he's still running a dictatorship down there, and although, you know, he has...
You can tell things aren't as out of control there and as desperate in Cuba as they are down in Haiti, so
right. Although
that ought to make people think twice.
Yeah,
so.
Well, in large part, it's because Castro has succeeded in creating the education substrate and the middle class substrate. To some extent, but you know, he certainly doesn't have a democracy. Joe, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, remember? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I go today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
Good and welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The last few minutes of the first hour of our program. And in the world's 30 wealthiest nations, the average level of corporate tax fell. This is the thing. You know, I'm not saying, you know, we should tax the corporations, we should tax the rich, and we should use that money to pay for everything else. I'm not suggesting that. What I am suggesting is that those among us, whether it's wealthy individuals or whether it's wealthy corporations, who are making maximal use of the benefits and the resources and the wonders and the gifts of democracy in the United States, should be paying our fair share toward that. And I mean, you know, here's how it goes to a, I guess you could call this a logical extreme. Police gave a record $216,900 speeding ticket to one of Finland's richest men under a system in which traffic fines are linked to an offender's income. Get this? This guy's a multimillionaire. Juicy Salonja, 27. He was going through a 25-mile-an-hour zone in downtown Helsinki at 55 miles an hour. The police handed him a ticket. And you don't pay, and it's not like a $100 fine no matter what, because the thought is, okay, for somebody who's worth $100 million, a $100 fine is so what? Whereas for somebody who makes, you know, $5,000 a year, a $100 fine is a big deal. Well, we want everybody to think that a speeding ticket is a big deal, because we don't want people to speed. So we're going to make a speeding ticket 1% of your income, or 1/100th of 1% of your income. So this guy, he's got a speeding ticket, and it's $216,900 for speed. Well, it stings him just about as badly as somebody making $5,000 or $10,000 a year gets hit with a $50 speeding ticket. And, you know, the question is, I don't think America's ready to go that far, frankly. But it illustrates a point. It illustrates an important point. This is Tom Hartman.
Thanks for being with us this first hour. Stick around. Those of you who are on stations that are carrying our continuing program, we will continue with more of the real Free Speech Zone.
Real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left of the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man, Dick, looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Haiti's President Jean-Bertrand Aristide resigned and flew into exile Sunday, pressured by a bloody rebellion and the United States. Gunfire crackled as the capital fell into chaos and U.S. Marines arrived in the country. A contingent of fewer than 100 Marines arrived Sunday, and more were to arrive today. They were the vanguard of a multinational force that the U.N. Security Council approved late Sunday night, and France said it would send troops today. Aristide's whereabouts were uncertain late Sunday, with officials saying his jet stopped to refuel in the Caribbean island of Antigua. A senior Caribbean community official said Aristide told him during the refueling stop he was bound for South Africa. Two American brothers arrested in the Philippines last year for alleged ties to Al-Qaeda-linked groups have been deported to the United States. Michael Ray Stubbs of Antioch, California, and his brother James of Newark, New Jersey, were arrested in December and ordered deported. Authorities alleged that James' separatist Moro Islamic Liberation Front. The brothers had been under surveillance at the time of their arrest and had entered the country on tourist visas, but they also carried documents indicating that they were soliciting funds to build Muslim schools and mosques. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez railed against the Bush administration on Sunday in a speech before tens of thousands of supporters, accusing it of meddling in Venezuelan affairs and supporting anti-government forces trying to remove him from office. Mr. Chavez, whose language has become increasingly hostile in the face of American support for a recall referendum, warned that if the Bush administration carried out what he called American aggressions, the people of the United States should know that they will not get another drop of oil from Venezuela. Iraq's governing council has agreed on an interim constitution, marking a crucial step in Washington's plan to hand sovereignty back to Iraqis. A spokesman announced that Islam will be the official religion of the state and it will be a source of legislation, and that the law will say to respect Islam as the religion of the majority. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A $10,000 reward offered by the Doonesbury comic strip for proof that George W. Bush served in the Alabama National Guard during the Vietnam War has elicited over 1,300 responses but turned up no credible evidence yet, said Gary Trudeau on Friday. Trudeau said he planned to pay the $10,000 from his own money, saying, what else am I going to do with a huge tax cut that I don't need? For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I wonder, is there anything that White House political operative Karl Rove won't try to turn into a political ad? I'm not even counting the big P.T. Barnum stunts like posing George in a Top Gun costume on that aircraft carrier last year or secretly flying Bush all the way to Iraq last Thanksgiving so he could be photographed holding a turkey. For these guys, everything is a prop, paid for by us taxpayers. Take the federal budget, which usually is crammed with statistics and charts detailing the seriousness of the government's business. But this year, for the first time ever, the document includes 27 glossy photos of our boy George in various heroic poses. Here he is in front of a giant American flag. Here he is talking with an old woman in a wheelchair. Here he is helping a child learn to read. One expects to find a centerfold pop-up of Bush hugging a puppy. Speaking of popping up, his Georgeness popped up at the famous Daytona 500 NASCAR race, posturing before 180,000 race fans and a huge TV audience. If he wants to make a campaign appearance there, fine. But Rove put him in Air Force One, costing us taxpayers about $57,000 an hour for the flight, and they used the plane itself as a prop, dramatically swooping over the racetrack as he departed. A priceless publicity shot dutifully covered by NBC, which broke away from coverage of the race itself to show the Prez soaring up and away. Bush even uses taxpayer funds for literally making TV ads. His new Medicare prescription drug law, which actually will deliver more to the profiteering drug companies than to senior citizens, has been turned into a glowing 30-second TV ad by the White House. It cost us taxpayers $9.5 million to air it. This is Jim Hightower saying, for the Bushites, all the world is a stage, and we're merely the people who have to pay for their show.
Randy, tell these Vermont campers a scary story.
They called it heartburn. The frequent kind. The kind only a monster could scare away. Well, a monster, or a new pill called Prilosec OTC. One pill a day for 24 hours of zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day. But without this little pill, things could get creepy.
Randy, hold me!
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, stream 143 on the Sirius satellite, on radio stations from California to North Carolina, and on the internet at radiopower.org. I guess Shoutcast has a stream as well. Radiopower.org, I was just talking to Shelby, who runs it, and their website is down, but their web stream is up. She said that there's a whole pile of folks connected and listening. So, anyhow, just reset things here. Those of you who are listening on regular radio stations, I apologize for a little bit of shop talk here, but we are no longer web streaming at ieamericaradio.com because ieamerica is no more. And so you pick up our web stream, radiopower.org, go to tomhartman.com, and you'll find the links right there, tomhartman.com. And if you'd like to call, our number to be on the program, our number is 1-866
That's the, you know, it's a toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. And that's their toll-free number. You get to call and say hello to Louise, who's doing our call screening here today. The I want to continue on this whole issue of and special thanks to Dane Scott of Tune Tracker 2, who helped us put together our automation equipment over the over this last hysterical week, and it's doing a great job. Knockwood, the Republican, this myth, here's the myth: the Republican Party has always been the party of big business and cheap labor. And, you know, there's a lot of people who like to believe that, and certainly that is the case right now. And to some extent, a lot of the Democratic Party is also the party of big business and cheap labor. And you see, the divide, while the obvious divide is Republican and Democrat, the real divide, frankly, is conservative and liberal. And I know liberal's become a dirty word, but, you know, frankly, liberal is the word that's usually used to describe the type of government that we and about 81 other nations in the 80 other nations, 81 nations altogether in the world, are referred to by the United Nations, by economists, by scholars of democracy as what are called liberal democracies. And I know there's been a concerted 20-year campaign by Newt Gingrich to make, you know, to make that a bad word. And the reason why is because in order to be mighty, you must have mighty enemies. You know, I wrote an op-ed piece about this some time ago that was on Common Dreams and Alternate and whatnot, that Superman would be one incredibly boring comic book if it wasn't for Kryptonite and Lex Luthor. I mean, if you don't have a supervillain, you don't have a superhero. If Batman didn't have the Joker, you know, or the Penguin, or, you know, if Indiana Jones didn't have, you know, not just Nazis, but Nazis with supernatural power from the Ark of the Covenant, it would have been a boring story. It would have been he goes from here to there to there to there. It would have been another travelogue. Homer taught us this with the Odyssey. I mean, here's the storyline: these guys go off and they do some exploring and they try to make their way home. Well, that sounds kind of boring, but by coming up against mighty enemies all along the way, you know, Medusa and the Minotaur and all these stuff, they had an opportunity to show their goodness, to show their essential humanity. And so what we've seen over the last 15 years with conservative talk radio is that in order to get people to believe that the interests of large multinational corporations who are behaving in a monopolistic fashion, and again, I want to make it very clear, I'm not even opposed to large multinational corporations. My opposition is to monopoly and interference with government, because those things, monopoly is destructive to a free market, and interference with the government is destructive to democracy, and that it just boils down to that. I'm all in favor of people having a business and making a buck, and trying to do it here too, and have spent my life doing it. You know, it's a fine thing, but. So anyhow, here's this myth that the Republicans have always been the party of, you know, the corrupt party of big business and cheap labor. And the reality is that the Republican Party was formed back in the 1850s after the Whigs went down in flames in response to the fact that the Democratic Party had been so corrupted by slavery. And the Democratic Party back in the 1850s was the party of cheap labor, only cheap labor was called slavery. Boy, was that cheap. I mean, there were some expenses associated with slavery, but still, it was cheap labor, and it was in the 1870. It was in 1872 that the Republicans split off from the Progressives, and the modern Republican Party was formed, which basically got in bed with big corporations. Back then, it was the railroads, and the Progressives went their own way, and they split off from the Republicans. And then the Progressives ultimately, that was a significant movement. A lot of the progressive activity that was successful was done actually during the Calvin Coolidge administration, you know, during the Roaring Twenties and before. And it was done without a political party supporting it. The Democrats weren't in favor of it. The Republicans weren't in favor of it. But you had this movement, the progressive populist movement, Teddy Roosevelt out there beating the drum, you know, the Bull Moose Party and everything. And so that, you know, that's another testimonial to the power of a movement. But I've got this this great comment that Abe Lincoln made that I want to share with you in just a minute. We do have a caller, however. Dan in Leesburg, I'm assuming that's Leesburg, Virginia, is on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am alive and kicking, Dan. What's up?
Okay, I have a question for you that is absolutely in earnest. This is not a quiz question or anything like that.
Sure.
A question for you and the listeners, which is there, I cannot think of one, but maybe someone knows the name of a large American-based multinational corporation that is not trying to monopolize industry? Because just in reference to what you said about, you know, I'm definitely not against large business as is either, but it seems to me like pretty much every large multinational business I can think of has tried repeatedly over and over again to monopolize its corner of whatever market it's in.
Yeah, well, see, that's the unfortunate thing, Dan, and it's not like we have to have a rogues gallery and blame this company and praise that company, because the unfortunate reality is that business, ultimately, when you boil it down, is a game. Just like baseball,
right.
Just like soccer, you know, just, it's a game. And it's a game in which the way that you keep score is by whether or not you're making money. And
right.
And the rules of the game of business are defined by government, and the rule by government, which is, in the case of a liberal democracy, we the people. And so we set the rules for the game of business. And there have been times in the history of the United States, and one of the most conspicuous ones was the December 1st, 1890, when Senator Sherman introduced Senate Bill No. 1, which was a bill to ban monopolies in commerce. And, of course, borrowing phrasing from Thomas Jefferson. I mean, this had been the law of the land up until the Civil War. Lincoln had to suspend it in order to allow companies to get big enough to make enough war material that he could feed the Union Army, you know, the weapons and things that they need. He was never able to close that back up. The railroads came along. All these monopolies came along. Senator Sherman put in the Sherman Antitrust Act. That created this suppression, as it were, although, they found ways around it, and there was this big charter-mongering race to the bottom thing in the 1880s, 1890s, led largely by John Rockefeller, where he was state shopping. But the bottom line is, no, I don't have an answer. I don't know of one, Dan. And the reason I don't know of one is not because there isn't a good corporation out there, although there probably are some based in other countries. The reason why I can't identify one, and part of it may be that I just don't know. Maybe there's one out there. Maybe one of our listeners will let us know. But I think, by and large, the reason why there isn't one out there is because we have rigged the game. We have set up the rules of the game to reward monopolistic behavior. Go ahead.
I definitely agree with that. I wish there was a company out there who had the ethical sense to realize that allowing for competition was in their best interest in the long run.
Yeah, the problem is that ethical sense will put you out of business in a competitive game where the rules of the game have been set up that whoever eats fastest gets all the food. And so the place to attack this is not by picking on the corporations. The place to attack this is by going back to the legislation that defines what a corporation is, what powers and rights a corporation has, and how far a corporation can go. And those rules are all there on the books. They're just half of them, frankly, are not enforced, and the other half of them, the lobbyists and whatnot, have figured out ways to wiggle around them. And now that they've got the Republican Party and good chunks of the Democratic Party captives of their interests, they're every day rewriting the rules and changing the rules of the game. Oh, we don't have to pay for the infrastructure to have public education. We don't have to pay for the roads. We don't have to pay for the police. We can charter offshore in Bermuda. You know, come on, this is nuts. What we need to be talking about, the conversation we need to be having in America, Dan, is how do we recalibrate? How do we go back to common sense democracy and have, for those who are fanatics about the use of language, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, and have the rules of the game of business set up in a way that, A, businesses can exist and make a buck and entrepreneurs can come into the workplace and all that kind of good stuff can happen, and B, democracy is served, and the middle class is enhanced.
That's excellent. That's an excellent argument. I've just been better informed than I was before. Thank you for the the ammunition, so to speak.
Okay.
And one last thing,
sure.
I just wanted to say I'm glad that you're still on the air after IE went down.
Great, thanks. Dan, how are you listening? How are you listening?
Sorry?
How are you listening to us?
I'm listening to you on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you for calling, Dan. I appreciate the call.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. 1-866-889-8894. And Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania is on. Hey, is that Rob Call who runs opednews.com?
It is. How are you doing, Tom?
Hey, Rob. Great to have you on.
Hey, listen, I was talking to Louise. I got on. I have a link to the feed on my website that apparently is working.
Okay.
So if that may be a way to get on if the one on Radio Power isn't for right
now. Well, I was just talking to Shelby, and she said that her servers are working. Her stream is working, so anybody who has it bookmarked is working. But for some reason, the web page was down. And she said it went down just before our show went on. She thought somebody had hacked her or attacked her or something. Who knows? I don't know. But great. There's a link off opednews.com. Of course, anybody who can't hear us doesn't know that. Anybody who can hear us doesn't need it. But it's good. It's good for future reference.
I was calling, though, because you were talking about how Bush and the whole idea of having the good antagonist, the evil guy, Luther and Kryptonite. And I'm wondering... is Bush good enough as a bad guy for the Democratic candidate who takes him on, or is some other antagonist besides Bush or combined with Bush going to be necessary? Have you thought about that?
Well, you know, Cheney certainly has been providing ammunition for those on the left, and my guess is, as I said, he's going to be replaced by Giuliani, which will be make it much harder for a Democrat to take him on. But, you know, time will tell. Thanks for the call, Rob.
I just heard Frist.
Yeah, 1-8, oh, that's a possibility, too. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Peer pressure often leads outdoor expeditions into risky situations. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You're out on a wilderness hike and you begin to feel fatigued, but you don't say anything to your companions because you don't want to seem weak or be the one to end the expedition. That's a common situation, according to Lawrence Gonzalez, the author of Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why. Gonzalez says peer pressure, real or imagined, often keeps people from speaking up during outdoor recreation activities. He says the stronger hikers or climbers in a group should watch for signs of trouble among their companions.
You really have to look out for and pace yourself to the least capable member of the group. If you have a beginner going out with experts, the experts are going to have to wait, and people often get into trouble, you know, where they don't want to be the one to say, hey, I can't go any faster, will you please slow down? And then they do something dumb like separate the group or just work too hard and exhaust themselves.
Gonzalez says mismatches between abilities can lead to friction, frustration, and poor decision-making. He says you should make sure you're all on the same page before signing up for a group expedition.
There is a type that psychologists refer to as impulsive sensation seekers, and those are the people who you want to be careful about because they're going to take way more risk than is advisable and probably get you hurt as well as themselves. You need to know what type you are, and especially if you're going out with others, match your abilities with theirs.
Gonzalez says there's no shame in recognizing your limitations. He says it's one of the keys to having a safe and rewarding wilderness experience. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went off with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Company.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The crops are all in, and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are piling their creosote guns. They're flying back to the Mexican border. Pay all their wages to wait back again. Goodbye to my Juan, goodbye Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesus y Maria.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, 25 minutes past the hour. Truth in broadcasting for a change, isn't it a great thing? April 6th, 1859, Abraham Lincoln gave a fascinating speech. I want to share it with you in just a minute. First, we have Dave on the line. Dave is listening on Sirius Satellite. Dave, where are you located in the United States?
Missouri.
Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. It's good to find this breath of fresh air on the airwaves. I've been a conservative talk show listener for about 12 years, but I consider myself something of a strict constructionist rather than a Republican or a Democrat or a liberal or a conservative. And I've had to vote for independent candidates three times in the last 16 years because I can't agree with either one of those sides. And it's good to hear you come on with an even, balanced, sane approach to the issues, try to ferret out the real meat of what's going on and expose the truth rather than the demagoguery that we get shoved down our throats so often. I just wanted to say I'm glad to have found you on the air. I drive a truck for a living across the nation back and forth. I get home about twice a month, so I spend a lot of time sitting in here listening to the radio.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Dave, thank you. Thanks for the compliment. What by constructionist, you mean you agree with the construction of the United States Constitution and think it should be applied appropriately and that sort of thing?
Yes, I believe it should be interpreted literally. The judicial activism, both at the federal and district court level, is appalling. I think that Mr. Jefferson in Washington would just have a coronary if they had to pick up a newspaper in today's world and see what's going on in San Francisco and then see that the president's solution to it is an amendment to the Constitution that would, for the first time, deny rights to people rather than preserve and protect them.
Yeah, actually, it would be the second time. Prohibition was the first time. But that, you know, look at how
actually,
successful
you're right.
That was.
I'm sorry.
Look at how successful that was. But, you know, Jefferson actually did almost have a coronary right around this issue. Are you familiar with the Mabry versus Madison decision?
Yes.
In, what was it, 1803, I believe it was?
Yeah, I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, in 1803, what happened was, we don't need to go through the whole details of the things, but James Madison was the Secretary of State, and there was this lawsuit and that involved, as I recall, the University of New Hampshire and or Dartmouth. And what ended up with the case was that... what was his name? The guy who was the Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Oh, you got me there.
Yeah, anyhow, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, who had been installed by John Adams and who was a strict Federalist, and who was an enemy of Thomas Jefferson, took it upon himself in Mabry versus Madison in 1803 to say for the very first time that the Supreme Court had the right to strike down laws made by Congress and to interpret the Constitution. And it's actually not in the Constitution. It's a judicial precedent. So folks who call themselves constructionists, generally, it really tracks all the way back to that. This is nothing new.
And it unfortunately started a cascade down a slippery slope we've yet to find the brakes for.
There's been no shortage of people who've tried. I can tell you, Grover Cleveland tried to slow them down, FDR tried to slow them down, Calvin Coolidge tried to slow them down. A few just kind of embraced the whole process, but it's a tough one. How are we going to get democracy back in the United States? I believe that the same way that we got rid of slavery and that we got the vote for women and we got direct election of the Senate, it's going to take a movement, a grassroots movement of the people. It's something that we've got to do from the bottom up.
I believe the key, and I don't believe that we can kill that monster and fix its problems. I heard a recent...
Dave, I got to interrupt you there because the music means we're run out of time here on this segment. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Actually, stick around, Dave. I'll pick you up on the other side. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
After the towers fell, our streets, homes, and offices were coated with dust containing asbestos and other cancer-causing chemicals. But instead of heeding the health warnings of their own experts, the Bush White House told us it was safe to go back into Lower Manhattan when it wasn't. There is a better way to protect us, Mr. President. Take action now that keeps more harm from happening. Clean up the world trade dust that's still in our homes and workplaces. And be honest with us. Don't hold back health warnings that will keep us safe.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Scientists try to save what's left of a wetland in the deserts of Iraq. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The southeastern corner of Iraq was once a wetland that covered more than 7,000 square miles. Many Christians, Muslims, and Jews believe it was the ancient Garden of Eden. More than 90% of it was drained in the early 1990s, but today people from around the world are trying to protect what's left. An international conservation team of scientists from the United States and Iraq are working on a project called Eden Again. Michelle Stevens works on the project. She says the vast marshland once looked like a sea of green reeds in the desert. Its waters were filled with fish and wildlife, especially migrating birds.
There were a huge number of different kinds of birds, of Dalmatian pelicans and ducks and geese that used those marshes. 1 to 10 million birds, an entire flyway, wintered there from Siberia.
In the early 1990s, the regime of Saddam Hussein built canals a mile wide to drain the marsh, apparently to flush out opponents to the regime who tried to hide there. Stephen says what's left is an ecological wasteland.
It's not degraded wetland, it's desert. It's big blocks of soil cracked and dry and covered with salt. Where there were once lakes, there's now 1 to 2 feet of salt. So it really turned a huge area into a desert.
Stephen says the Eden Again project is working to protect a small portion of the marshes that still remain. It will help the people of Iraq reflood some parts of the wetland that are not badly damaged by salt. Its ultimate vision is having the wetland restored in its entirety. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do I? All I need is my brother. I say I'm gonna get high.
Yeah, with a little help from our friends, still broadcasting, still standing. Here's Tom Hartman. 26 minutes before the hour. This is the place where smart people get their news. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. 1-866-889-8894. And this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. We were talking about Abraham Lincoln and the history of the Republican Party, which has sadly become so corrupted now that basically there's a for sale sign on the White House, and Tom DeLay, I think he inhaled too many pesticides in his career as a bug killer because I thought that it's wandering into personal attacks, and I try not to do that. But Tom DeLay just really concerns me, the extremism of this man. Anyhow, on April 6th, 1859, Abraham Lincoln had been invited to a Republican Party event in Boston that was honoring the birthday of Thomas Jefferson, which was on April 6th, whatever year Jefferson was born, back in the 1730s or 40s or something. And he couldn't show up, and so he mailed a speech. But, this is one of Lincoln's speeches. He wrote it in his own hand. This was back in the days before speechwriters. And he wrote, it would be a good... And he was talking about how the Democratic Party had degenerated into becoming the party of wealth... of serving the wealthy special interests and cheap labor, specifically slavery. Keep in mind, this was 1859, and that a new party was being birthed that would represent the interests of the average people. And you have to hear this. I got to just read to you a couple of paragraphs, a couple of sentences out of this thing. It's incredible. He first of all, he notes the irony that a whole bunch of Republicans are gathering to celebrate Jefferson's birthday when Jefferson founded the Democratic Party. It was called the Democratic Republicans way back when. It started out, there was just everybody was a Federalist, which meant, we're in charge, we all agree that we should have a federal government with a constitution. And in the 1870s and the 1880s, to be a Federalist meant that you were, basically in charge. You were in favor of America being separate from England. And then George Washington was a Federalist, and he wasn't a partisan. George Washington was, democracy of, by, and for the people. He was it's interesting to read the biographies of him. A very decent man, apparently, by all accounts. In some regards. I mean, yes, he owns slaves, and it's a terrible thing. And that's a whole other issue that I just, it's beyond the scope of this discussion, but that we have dealt with on this program and will again, no doubt. But in any case, you had Washington, and then what came along, John Adams basically polarized the situation in 1796, 2 years into his presidency. He was president from 1796 to 1800. He was president. So in 1798, 2 years into his presidency, John Adams who is tired of being criticized in the newspaper, in the press, particularly by the grandson of Benjamin Franklin, a guy by the name of Benjamin Franklin Bach, B-A-C-H-E. And he got passed through Congress based on a spurious thing called the XYZ Affair, which was he was whipping up this war fever with France. You know, the French, Napoleon, France had tried the democratic experiment, and it had failed, and Napoleon was in charge now, and Adams was, you know, France is going to get us, and they sent this delegation to France, and these three people showed up in their room in the middle of the night and said, hey, listen, if you give us a big bribe, we will convince Napoleon to cut a deal with you, and they never did get their names, and that came to be known as the XYZ Affair, XYZ being these three guys' names. And it was really just according to Thomas Jefferson in his personal letters, which I have read. I just finished writing a book based on his personal letters, and which is one of the reasons why all this stuff is fresh in my mind. Jefferson and pretty much everybody else agreed that these three guys were just hustlers. They were the equivalent of, you know, like street hustlers, just petty hustlers, trying to squeeze some money out of the gullible Americans. But John Adams jumped on this thing. He said, hey, here's an opportunity. And he started yelling about how the French were planning terrorist attacks against the United States, that they were trying to take us over from within, that we had an enemy among us, that the XYZ Affair was proof of this, and that we had to crack down on this, on voices of dissent within the United States if we were to preserve the Republic. And in the second year of his presidency, in 1798, he got passed a series of four laws, which collectively came to be known as the Alien and Sedition Acts, which today are virtually cloned in the Patriot Act, except they were worse than the Patriot Act. I'm telling you, those of you who think things are bad now, they have been worse in the past. You will note that in the new Republican, conservative biographies, of John Adams. I mean, it's funny, you see the pictures of these authors of these, you know, best-selling books about John Adams and Thomas Jefferson that are out now that are written by conservatives, by people who have a political conservative bent, although it's not obvious unless you really understand history and you read the books. In, for example, McCollum's John Adams biography, there's half a dozen pages that deal with the Alien and Sedition Acts. The reality of the situation is, I mean, they just basically gloss over it. The reality of the situation is that the Alien and Sedition Acts absolutely polarized the United States, created a huge schism in this country, and led to the downfall of John Adams. John Adams wanted to run for a second term in office. In fact, he ran. And you know, it was called the Revolution of 1800 when Thomas Jefferson, who was his vice president, won. Jefferson, by the way, when Adams signed the Alien and Sedition Acts, actually left town in protest. And Jefferson's first official act of office when he took office was to free all those people in prison, 20 newspaper publishers and editors. Matthew Lyon, who was the congressman from Vermont, got up on the floor of Congress in 1798. After the Alien and Sedition Acts were passed, he got up on the floor of Congress and he spoke out against John Adams and some legislation that he was trying to pass, and the congressman from Connecticut, a guy by the name of Griswold, I forget his first name, came over with his cane and beat him to the ground, beat him to the floor. They had to restrain Griswold from beating Lyon to death. 2 weeks later, John Adams orders Lyon arrested. They send him back to Vergennes, Vermont, lock him up in a 10-by-6-foot prison cell, and he's there throughout the whole entire winter. He runs for re-election from his prison cell. He's being held in prison for speaking out against the president. See, John Adams used this little trick of saying, if you speak against the president, you are speaking against the government. This is the old trick of royalty, that the queen is the government, right? Well, actually, since democracy came to England in, I believe it was either 1832 or 1834, the Great Reform, when basically government got handed over to Parliament. I mean, yes, there was a Parliament before that and a Prime Minister, but it was in the early 1830, either 1832 or 1834. It's called the Great Reform. Those of you who are listening in England, you know what I'm talking about. Anybody who's studied British history. And that's basically when England became a parliamentary democracy, and the real power of government rested in the hands of parliament, of an elected parliament. I've wandered off track here, but anyhow, forgive me. I find this stuff fascinating. I find it just absolutely fascinating. It's just so much to American history. Anyhow, Benjamin Lyon, an elected member of Congress, ran for re-election from his prison cell in Vergennes, Vermont, and got re-elected. So he was one of the people that Thomas Jefferson let out of jail in 1800. All that stuff gets glossed over in these Republican biographies that are so popular now, which is tragic, which is why I wrote a book called a Return to Democracy, Reviving Jefferson's Dream, which Random House will be publishing on July 4th of this year. And I don't mean that as a plug for the book. You can't buy it now or anything. You know, it's I just said enough of this. I'm going to write a book about it. So anyhow, I set the stage. You understand now that so what had happened was that Jefferson created the Democratic. So when Adams did this whole politicization thing with the XYZ affair and the Alien Sedition Acts and split the nation, and does this sound familiar? When Adams did all this stuff, Jefferson, who was vice president, said, "I don't want to have anything to do with this stuff." And in Congress, there were people who said, "I don't want to have anything to do with this either. I don't want to be called a Federalist anymore if that's what John Adams is." And so there was a group that started that called themselves Republicans, and there was a group that started that called themselves Democrats. And basically, they had slightly different approaches, but their main thrust was they were both opposed to John Adams and the Federalists. Marshall, by the way, John Marshall was the name of the Supreme Court justice that I was trying to remember in the last half hour, who in the Mabry versus Madison in 1803 said that the Supreme Court had the power to be the final arbiter of the rule of the rule of law. Anyhow, so we got this situation where the Republicans, Jefferson pulled together the Republicans and the Democrats around 1799 and created this party called the Democratic Republicans. And by 1815 or 1820, I forget the year, I mean, you know, it varied where you were in the country and who you were and whatnot. They just stopped calling themselves the Democratic Republicans and started calling themselves the Democratic Party. And that exists to this day, the Democratic Party that Thomas Jefferson created. And the modern-day Republican Party didn't come into being until 1856, and their first candidate, of course, was Abraham Lincoln. And so with that little bit of background, here's this speech from Abe Lincoln, April 6, 1859. And he points out that it's ironic that the Republicans are gathering on the birthday of Jefferson, who founded the Democratic Party, which is their opposition. And he says his own newly formed Republican Party was the party of democracy, and that the Democrats had degenerated into being the party of wealthy people and cheap labor, slavery. And here's now we're quoting from Abraham Lincoln. "Remembering, too, that the Jefferson Party formed upon," this is the Democratic Party, "excuse me, formed upon the supposed superior devotion to the personal rights of men, holding the rights of property to be secondary and only greatly inferior." You get this? I mean, this is Lincoln acknowledging, Jefferson's acknowledging, that human rights trump property rights. And now back to Lincoln. "And assuming that the so-called democracy of today are the Jeffersonians and their opponents, the anti-Jefferson Party, it will be equally interesting to note how completely the two have changed hands as to the principle on which they were originally supposed to be divided." In other words, well, I've been saying this whole half hour here. The Democrats of today hold the liberty of one man to be absolutely nothing. Now, this is, you know, he was talking then about the Democratic Party corrupted by wealth and cheap labor, when in conflict with another man's right of property. Republicans, Abraham Lincoln said, on the contrary, this was the Republican Party when it was first formed, when it was opposed to the interests of wealth and cheap labor. Republicans, on the contrary, are for both the man and the dollar, but in case of conflict, the man before the dollar. This is Abraham Lincoln, his words. Then he tells a joke. He said, about how this switch happened, how this kind of change-off happened. He says, I remember being very much amused at seeing two partially intoxicated men engaged in a fight with their greatcoats. These are the long coats that people wore on, which fight, after a long and rather harmless contest, ended in each having fought himself out of his own coat and into that of the other. If the two leading parties of this day are really identical in the two, with the two in the days of Jefferson and Adams, they have performed the same feat as the two drunken men. You get it? It's, during Jefferson's time, the Democratic Party represented the interests of democracy and the average person, and Adams' Federalist Party, which then became the Whigs, which then ultimately became the Republicans, represented the interests of extreme wealth, big business, and cheap labor. And then the Democratic Party became corrupted, and they flipped, as Lincoln points out. And he goes on to say, but soberly, it is now no child's play to save the principles of Jefferson from total overthrow in this nation. And see, this is where we're at now. He says, the principles of Jefferson are the definitions and axioms of free society, and yet they are denied and evaded with no small show of success. He said, the Democrats, again, this is the party that had sold out to big business and cheap labor, quote, were supplanting the principles of free government and restoring those of classification, caste, and legitimacy, of free labor. They would delight a convocation of crowned heads plotting against the people. This is Jefferson speaking. They are the vanguard, the miners and sappers of a returning despotism. We must repulse them or they will subjugate us. End quote. And then he closed his letter by saying, this is a world of compensation, and he who would be no slave must consent to have no slave. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves, and under a just God cannot long retain it. All honor to Jefferson, Lincoln said, to the man who in the concrete pressure of a struggle for national independence by a single people had the coolness, forecast, and sagacity to introduce into a merely revolutionary document an abstract truth applicable to all men and all times. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolph Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
People get mad. There's a train of coming. You don't need no baggage. You just feed on God. All you need is faith. And the diesel's coming. Don't need no ticket. You just
and welcome back. It's Tom Hartman discussing solutions and not false promises. We're, you know, I don't want to get too didactic here. I don't want to get too into the, oh, this is an intellectual stuff. This is a history 101. No, I mean, this is all applies to modern politics. The point of it all is that what goes around comes around, and it's coming back around again. That we are facing a crisis in American politics right now that is not all that different in many ways from the crisis that was faced by Lincoln and by Jefferson. Now, Lincoln's crisis unfortunately led to the Civil War. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see that at all. Jefferson's crisis did not lead to the Civil War, but it was it's a crisis that was also faced by FDR. It's funny. It's like every 80 years. This comes around in the United States about every fourth generation. Go back and do the math on it. It's fascinating. In fact, there's a book written about this by Strauss and Howe called The Fourth Turning, just on the math of this. But here you have, quoting Abraham Lincoln, all honor to Jefferson, the man. Now, see, and this is what we need to re-imbue the Democratic Party with. This is, if there's a message for John Kerry or whoever ends up, you know, Edwards. I don't think Edwards is going to be. You know, it's pretty clear that it's going to be Kerry. But in any case, if There's a message for the Democratic candidate. Here it is from Republican Abraham Lincoln. All honor to Jefferson, the founder of the Democratic Party, to the man who, in the concrete pressure of a struggle for national independence, had the coolness, forecast, and sagacity to introduce into a mere revolutionary document. He's talking about the Declaration of Independence, right? An abstract truth, applicable to all men in all times, and so embalm it there that today and in coming days it shall be a rebuke and a stumbling block to the very harbingers of reappearing tyranny and oppression. In other words, we can't let them take away our Constitution. We got to do away with the Patriot Act and bring back America, please. Thank you very much. This is Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Haiti's President Jean-Bertrand Aristide resigned and flew into exile Sunday, pressured by a bloody rebellion and the United States. Gunfire crackled as the capital fell into chaos and U.S. Marines arrived in the country. A contingent of fewer than 100 Marines arrived Sunday, and more were to arrive today. They were the vanguard of a multinational force that the UN Security Council approved late Sunday night, and France said it would send troops today. Aristide's whereabouts were uncertain late Sunday, with officials saying his jet stopped to refuel in the Caribbean island of Antigua. A senior Caribbean community official said Aristide told him during the refueling stop he was bound for South Africa. Two American brothers arrested in the Philippines last year for alleged ties to Al-Qaeda-linked groups have been deported to the United States. Michael Ray Stubbs of Antioch, California, and his brother James of Newark, New Jersey, were arrested in December and ordered deported. Authorities alleged that James Stubbs met with members of Muslim extremist group Abu Sayyaf, as well as the separatist Moro Islamic Liberation Front. The brothers had been under surveillance at the time of their arrest and had entered the country on tourist visas, but they also carried documents indicating that they were soliciting funds to build Muslim schools and mosques. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez railed against the Bush administration on Sunday in a speech before tens of thousands of supporters, accusing it of meddling in Venezuelan affairs and supporting anti-government forces trying to remove him from office. Mr. Chavez, whose language has become increasingly hostile in the face of American support for a recall referendum, warned that if the Bush administration carried out what he called American aggressions, the people of the United States should know that they will not get another drop of oil from Venezuela. Iraq's governing council has agreed on an interim constitution, marking a crucial step in Washington's plan to hand sovereignty back to Iraqis. A spokesman announced that Islam will be the official religion of the state and it will be a source of legislation, and that the law will say to respect Islam as the religion of the majority. More news after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A $10,000 reward offered by the Doonesbury comic strip for proof that George W. Bush served in the Alabama National Guard during the Vietnam War has elicited over 1,300 responses but turned up no credible evidence yet, said Gary Trudeau on Friday. Trudeau said he planned to pay the $10,000 from his own money, saying, "What else am I going to do with a huge tax cut that I don't need?" For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you get your car stuck in mud, the worst thing you can do is to panic and hit the accelerator, for you'll just spin your wheels and sink deeper into the mud. George Tenet learned this the hard way last month. He's the beleaguered head of our slipping and sliding CIA, which finds itself stuck in the mud of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld lies about weapons of mass destruction. In a panicky effort to defend his agency's capability, Tenet hit the accelerator. He insisted in a widely publicized speech that the CIA is still at the top of its game, and his proof? He cited a clear victory for U.S. spooks in Malaysia against a factory that makes metal parts that, he claimed, can be used in nuclear weapons. Tenet said that as a result of this superb U.S. intelligence, the Malaysian government shut down the factory, a blow to black market proliferators of nukes, and an unequivocal victory for the home team of George Tenet and George Bush. But, oops, Tenet had faulty information. The Malaysian factory was not closed. "It's business as usual," said a factory official as she led a group of reporters through the modern facility shortly after Tenet's wheel-spinning speech. Then, CIA PR flacks hit the accelerator again. First, they claimed that Tenet's misstatement was the result of, quote, "an editing error made by speechwriters, not the result of faulty intelligence." The flacks explained that while the entire factory had not been shut down, the section of the plant that made the suspect parts was closed. Oops, wrong again. Malaysian officials say nothing was shut down. Moreover, instead of this factory being one of the largest in the rogue nuclear network, as Tenet claimed, it's a small firm with only 40 employees, mostly making high-precision parts for oil companies. This is Jim Hightower saying, why was Tenet so wrong on such a big speech? Because, get this, no one from the CIA bothered to visit the factory or even speak to its officials.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec OTC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC, that one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day. Hee-ho.
Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-ho.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec OTC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/...
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here. Telling the truths that predatory multinational corporations don't want you to know. Hey, the $10,000 reward offered by Gary Trudeau has not been taken. Some interesting information on that.
Let me give you our toll-free number again. It's changed. And unfortunately, Shelby tells me that the radiopower.org site is down right now, but it will be up. I'm sure it'll be up, so just, you know, keep trying. You can also find us a link to us off op-ednews.com and shoutcast.com. And we'll put a button on our website. But apparently a lot of folks have found the stream in any case. And welcome back to those of you who are listening to us on radio stations from coast to coast. 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. 1-866. That's one of those newfangled toll-free numbers. 1-866-889-8894. Is our telephone number, and we have on the line Jonathan in Palm Desert. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to make a quick comment. A few days ago, I was browsing around the Internet looking up president names.
Yeah.
And I came across the WhiteHouse.gov website.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you talking about Adams and Jefferson before, so I wanted to see what the presidential biographies would say about it. Well, naturally, it doesn't say anything about John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Act. But one of the interesting things I found was that after Jefferson creates the Democratic-Republican Party, every single president after that is listed as being Republican rather than Democrat.
Yes. That's a big change, by the way, that happened in the WhiteHouse.gov site. During the Bill Clinton administration, they actually correctly identified people. But George Bush has reinvented Thomas Jefferson and all of the Democrats up until basically the time of Lincoln as Republicans because they called the party the Democratic Republican Party.
Up to Jackson. Quick peek through it this morning when this came up again. And at Jackson, they mentioned how the Democratic-Republican split into the Democrats, which then gets to be vilified up to Abraham Lincoln, and then the National Republicans, or the Whigs.
Only they weren't actually called, they didn't call themselves Republicans at all. I mean, the Whigs just called themselves the Whigs.
Right, but they identify them as the as the Republicans up to that point. But, no, that's interesting. That's pretty much what I wanted to know, is whether this was a recent change to their website under
Bush. Yeah, it is. It happened about 2 years ago. The first year, I track that because over the last 4 years now, I've written two books that have to do with a lot of American history on equal protection and this new one. Actually, I've got two books coming out this year about American history. One is called Return to Democracy, and the other is We the People. And the WhiteHouse.gov website has always been a nice, fast place for me to, like, catch the name that somebody came into office, for example. I mean, you know, the presidents and things. And
right.
It's just been fascinating to watch how they have been fine-tuning the biographies of the various presidents, pointing out, you know, who actually didn't get a popular majority. I mean, virtually every biography, if they can somehow make the guy reflect well on George W. Bush's... I don't want to say failures, but weaknesses or whatever they do. It is. I mean, they don't just this administration doesn't just rewrite science and say, well, there's no global warming, or rewrite economics and say, oh, deficits don't matter. They're rewriting history. It's incredible.
That's really creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's great to have your show. You really helped clarify some of the liberal positions I've been taking on some of the Internet forums when I talk to folks.
Good on you, Jonathan.
So I'd like to thank you very much.
Keep up the good fight. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You too. Take care.
Thanks. 1-866-889-8894 is our phone number. Anyhow, there's no winner yet in the Doonesbury Bush search. Here this from CNN.com. A $10,000 reward offered by Doonesbury Comic Strip for proof that U.S. President... This was all last week. Did you see this? Every morning, part of my morning ritual, Louise and I read the paper and have breakfast, and I have to read Doonesbury. And there it was. You know, this all last week, this $10,000 reward... for anybody who can come forward and say, who's willing to say to the national press, yes, I was there when George Bush was there in the National Guard in Alabama. Now, there was this one guy who came forward and said it. Remember, the Republicans trotted him out. He was on the news and everything about, a month ago or so? Yeah, I was there. Sure enough, turns out, they asked him what the year was. It was the wrong year. I mean, it's just like every time a murder is committed, there are dozens of people who confess to it. Police know about this. I mean, this is you know, a well-known phenomena in whatever. And, you know, everybody wants to be famous for 5 minutes. I mean, every you know, if there's a high-profile murder, there will be 25 people saying that they did it. So this guy came out and he said, yeah, he saw George Bush there and had him in his office and filling out reports. And turns out he had the years wrong and he's, you know, it wasn't credible. So that guy is toast. So anyhow, Doonesbury's offering $10,000. And Gary Trudeau says he's going to pay it out of his own pocket. $10,000, that's a lot of money. How can you pay that out of your own pocket? Well, Gary Trudeau says, the guy who writes Doonesbury, he says, what else am I going to do with a huge tax cut I don't need? One of the unintended consequences of Mr. Bush's generosity toward the great unneedy is that I'm now a fat cat. Pretty amazing. He goes on to say, you can be sure some very motivated people have tried to find witnesses who can establish Bush's presence at Danley Base beyond a reasonable doubt. Anyone who could do so almost certainly would have surfaced by now. You can bet on it. I mean, the Republicans have been had to have been out there just dancing, just begging. And so Doonesbury says, well, hey, you know, can anybody do it? Well, it turns out there are some people who remember George Bush, and they're on the record. For example, people who worked with him on Busby's campaign, this guy whose campaign he went down to Alabama to work on. After the 2000 election, Winston Groom, who was the author of Forrest Gump, remembers a pleasant dinner he had with Bush in the summer of 72. Lobbyist Fred Crawford recalls talking baseball, lots of baseball with Bush. Birmingham native Murphy Archibald, now a lawyer in Charlotte, remembers how Bush often bragged about his drinking. This is from the Birmingham Times. For much of 1972, the 26-year-old Bush lived and worked and played in Alabama, mostly in Montgomery. Keep in mind, this is a local newspaper here. And he lived in a two-bedroom, one-bath cottage in Montgomery's historic Cloverdale neighborhood, the furnished home of a 68-year-old widow. That's what the Smith family remembers most about Bush. This is the family of this woman whose home he rented. How he left their aunt's home damaged, dirty, and dumpy. Mary Smith says, quote, he was just a rich kid who had no respect for other people's possessions. Her family found damaged walls, broken furnishings, and a chandelier destroyed by George Bush when he left the house. A bill sent to collect the damages went unpaid, the family said. So far, that's the only evidence of George Bush being in Alabama. Pretty good evidence, but I don't think it's quite what they were looking for. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the phone. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom, and thank you for the ongoing history lesson. It's always fun to listen in. Don't have to do much reading anymore along the lines of history. I just listen to the Tom Hartman show. Well, it all comes to me.
Yeah, but keep reading. There's some great books out there now.
Oh, yes.
There's just some great stuff.
I have a 14-year-old son. It's nice to introduce him to the history of our country because it's fascinating.
Yeah, Gore Vidal has a new kind of a novelized version of the Founders, and I'm only about a third of the way through it, but it appears to be absolutely brilliant. I can't remember the title right now.
Oh, I'll look for it.
Yeah.
Interesting, and forgive me if it's irrational exuberance. I realize it's kind of early in the presidential fight, but I've been listening to a good deal of right-wing radio, which I do as a matter of course, because you need to know your enemy as far as I'm concerned. They don't have much, do they? When you kind of weed through the sniggering and the hyperbole, what you end up with is they're calling John Kerry a flip-flopper, and that's all they have. Every argument seems to return to that central point that John Kerry has changed his mind on some of his votes in his 20 years in the Senate. They, of course, don't bring up, you know, being for the Kyoto Treaty and then being against the Kyoto Treaty and being against nation building and then being for nation building. It, you know, that sword cuts both ways.
On the part of George W. Bush.
Yes, yeah. Of course. I just don't understand. If this is all they have, personal attacks and trying to attack a voting record, which to my mind looks fairly distinguished, what are they going to do? They can't back up their record.
Well, you haven't seen the big and dirty stuff yet coming out.
That's true.
What you expect to hear a lot about Jane Fonda about how our men in Vietnam were killed because the Vietnamese were encouraged by John Kerry's traitorous behavior against his nation by speaking out against the war. Forget the fact that the war was even now the architect of the war, McNamara, the then defense secretary, has written in his biography an apology for the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
I mean, McNamara, the guy who, you know, the Rumsfeld of that day, has written in his autobiography an apology to the families of the young men and women who died in Vietnam for an unnecessary war. And most of the other people from that era are no longer alive. I mean, you know, who were prosecuting the war, Nixon, LBJ.
Yeah.
But forget that, because that won't come out. But what will come out is they're going to be tarring John Kerry with the, oh, he's a traitor, he was opposed to the war. And you're going to see the Vietnam War resurface again, number one. Number two, you're going to see the culture wars writ big. Because when the economy's going down in flames, when you're shredding the Constitution, when you're handing off corporate tax dollars to your corporate buddies like there's no tomorrow, shoveling money out of the White House and out of Washington, D.C., and you got to distract people. And you distract them by hitting them in the gut. You get them at the gut level. So it'll be things like abortion, school, and his daddy did this with the flag burning amendment. He's going to do it with gay marriage. It's the exact same strategy.
Yeah, Lee Atwater's lying in his grave wondering what he started.
And among his dying words were, please don't go down that road again. In fact, I've got this new book I've got coming out, one of the epigraphs, the little thing that you open a chapter with, the little quotes, mm-hmm. is a quote from Lee Atwater saying, I made a terrible mistake. I introduced this kind of politics and God forgive me, and please don't do what I did. But in any case, it's going to get dirty. It's going to get really dirty, and it already is. You're seeing it now on the right-wing websites. That's where you're seeing they're testing. These are all the trial balloons. And if you really want to know what the attacks are going to be, check out Newsmax.com and some of the other right-wing websites, and you'll be able to see. It's coming. It's coming. And then it'll make its way to right-wing talk radio, to hate radio. You can bet on it.
Well, it's good to still hear you on KTRC here in New Mexico, and I'll keep listening, man.
Well, I'm really glad to be on KTRC there in New Mexico, and thanks to Fred Senna for helping make it happen. And be sure to contact the local sponsors of whatever radio station you're listening to and thank them for carrying this program and buy their products, patronize their products. That's what keeps radio on the air. Right wing, left wing, whatever it is, contact the sponsors. Thanks a lot. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you own a piece of land, you might not own what's beneath it. That's a growing issue for people in western states. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Many western ranchers have no control over mining or drilling on their property. They don't own the minerals beneath their feet because of what's called a split estate. The government often owns the mineral rights and leases them to developers. Jill Morrison is with the Powder River Basin Resource Council, a group representing landowners in northeastern Wyoming.
So a lot of people in the West live on land where the government owns the minerals beneath them. And in a lot of the way the law is written at federal and state levels, the mineral development takes precedent over someone's surface land rights.
Morrison says that fact has become painfully real for Wyoming ranchers whose land lies over deep deposits of natural gas. The gas industry is rapidly developing wells in the Powder River Basin to tap into this methane, which is trapped in coal beds.
And so people have drillers coming to their homes saying, we have leased the rights under your land. We're going to come on a drill. We're going to drill 120 wells on your ranch. Here's our plan and sign here. Basically, you have no or very little negotiating authority about how it's going to take place on your land.
Morrison, whose family has ranched in the area for generations, says a landowner can spend thousands of dollars in legal fees trying to negotiate with the gas drillers. She says most companies offer some compensation, but it's not enough to cover the drillers' use of the land or the mess they leave behind. Morrison's group is advocating changes in state and federal laws to address the issue of split estates. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million.
federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left of the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man, Dick, looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida...
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Gladly walk across the desert with no shoes upon my feet to share with you the last bite of bread I had to eat. I would swim out to save you in your sea of broken dreams. But all your hopes are sinking, let me show you what love means. Love can build a bridge.
And welcome back.
In your heart and
here, right smack dab in the center of the vast radical middle conspiracy. This is Tom Hartman. Take no imitations. And yeah, love can build a bridge. And that's at the risk of sounding maudlin. I mean, these are the real issues that we need to be considering in America. How do we care? How do we create a society in which fair play isn't a code word for the rich getting management, middle class, the working people getting dumped into poverty level jobs? How do we build a society? Keep in mind, the middle class is an artifact of government not participating in the marketplace, but regulating the marketplace. And yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Shemin is on the line. I've got to push the right button here. Hey, Shemin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program in Santa Fe there. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Tom, how about you?
I'm alive and kicking.
That's excellent. So am I. I wanted to ask you, and I don't know, I missed a few of your shows, and you might have covered the subject after the debates on CNN with Larry King in the LA Times.
Mm-hmm.
I stuck to that channel right after the debates, and the person who had a show on, I don't know his name, brought some alarming news to us, which was that the 9/11 Commission wants an extension.
That was Aaron Brown, and Aaron Brown started out his news right after the debates. He does a newscast at 10 o'clock every night on CNN, which is one of the more well-done newscasts. I've come to think of it as kind of like the BBC of broadcast journalism here in America, because Aaron Brown cuts it right down the middle. He does a very good job.
Well,
and
that's
exactly
what he did. It was almost shocking. My mouth was dropped because I couldn't believe his comments. I mean,
yeah.
On CNN,
yeah,
being such a controlled enterprise, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm a little shocked, and I wanted to ask you, There was a comment made about, you know, President Bush wants the extension to be granted, and do you think that this is politics? Because I truly believe that our administration doesn't want this to happen, especially because they want to grant the extension to be extended for about 2 more months, meaning the end of July. And I believe that our administration currently would not want that to happen since it's so close to the elections, because I think this commission is going to reveal some very shocking things.
Yeah, they may well.
People.
Shimin, we're getting close to the end of the next break here, but here's the deal that got cut. The administration, Bush was on the record as saying he was in favor of the prolonging, but he was working behind the scenes to kill it through Denny Hastert.
Mm-hmm.
They brokered a deal, largely because of stuff like what Aaron Brown did. The American people basically were saying, no, we want the extension, we want to know what's going on. The commission wanted Bush and Cheney to testify. The deal that they cut was that while Gore and Clinton will testify in open session before the entire committee, Bush and Cheney will only have to testify for 1 hour, maximum of 60 minutes, in front of only 2 people from the commission, friendly questioners, and that's it, and no more. And so they basically cut a deal where, and also Condoleezza Rice, the security advisor who Sandy Berger had told right at the very beginning, bin Laden's going to be your number one priority, she gets to not testify. She doesn't have to testify. So they cut a deal. They gave them the extension, but they put so many limits on it that it's going to really hobble the commission's ability to really do the kind of investigative work that's necessary.
Mm.
But, you know, let's hope that some truth comes out of this thing. But it's going to be a tough one, Shimin. It's going to be a really tough one. And you know, because 9/11 is a huge issue, and it deserves a good, honest discussion outside of the realm of politics. And I don't think it's going to get it. I'm very concerned about this. Shimin, thanks for the call, and thanks for raising the issue. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oil took its toll on Alaska's Prince William Sound for years after a disastrous spill. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. 15 years ago this month, the oil tanker Exxon Valdez ran aground off the shores of Alaska. 11 million gallons of oil leaked out of the ship and covered about 1,300 miles of shoreline. People spent almost 4 years cleaning up the oil, but a new study shows that a lot of it stuck around and caused problems long after cleanup efforts ended. Pete Peterson is a marine biologist at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and he helped write a report on the oil spill that was published in the journal Science. Peterson says a lot of oil washed onto beaches that absorbed it like a sponge. The oil seeped into coarse sediments, and it stayed there. Peterson says it's only natural that the oil could persist for years under those conditions.
After all, think of where oil comes from. Oil comes from subsurface pockets. By putting it under the surface, we are approaching the sort of environment in which oil has remained for many years.
Peterson says that trapped petroleum caused problems for years after the accident. For example, he says it killed the eggs of pink salmon. He says when the eggs survived exposure to the oil and hatched, the fish were often scrawny and had a hard time surviving at sea.
The toxicity from petroleum is not simply, as we had contemplated 2 decades ago, a consequence of acute exposure. Rather, the oil has long-term consequences. What we may have dismissed in the past as insignificant actually translate into loss of animals, loss of abundance, production, and reproductive capacity.
Peterson says that it's hard to tell how long the oil will remain in Prince William Sound, but he says it could linger in some areas for up to 30 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, pacify you, deny, defy, or crucify you. All I really wanna do is maybe be friends with you. No, I ain't looking to fight with you, frighten you or attacking you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here in the Truth Arena. You know, speaking of which, we were talking about how Doonesbury was offering this $10,000 reward for George W.'s whereabouts. If any of our listeners know where he was, by the way, 1-866, our telephone number, one of these newfangled 800 numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Is our new toll-free number. And so anyhow, Doonesbury's offering $10,000 to anybody who can who's just willing to say it, you know, with any, I mean, you don't have to have pictures, but you know, I mean, it has to be some semblance of credibility. You have to have actually been, you know, demonstrate that you were there. But $10,000 and national publicity, and then we get the story that, well, he was there. His landlady knew that he was there. Because he trashed the apartment and refused to pay the bill to clean it up. But that's not kind of what they're looking for. Well, here we also find that the Bush bio on the Internet inflates his guard service. The reality is he spent 5 months learning how to fly an F-102 and then 22 months as a part-time pilot, almost 2 years. And then he stopped flying in April of 72. It's when he went off to Alabama. At 30 months before he was supposed to, you know, the end of his commitment. Nonetheless, says the Boston Globe, this is an article by Walter V. Robinson, of the staff of the Boston Globe, nonetheless, the biography of Bush on the U.S. State Department's website credits him with almost 6 years in the F-102's cockpit. Now, keep in mind, he was disqualified from flying because he didn't show up for his flight physical. About the same time that they started random drug tests. Interesting coincidence. The State Department says he flew for 6 years. And the websites of the American embassies in Germany, Italy, Pakistan, Vietnam, and South Korea use identical language. Now, the Boston Globe goes on to say, after the 2000 election, when evidence of Bush's abbreviated flying career and his propensity to miss required drills became public, the presidential biography written for the White House website suddenly made no... made no mention of the period of Bush's service, only saying that he served as an F-102 pilot. But the State Department biography of Bush, which has been on his website since 2001, makes the president out to be more of a frequent flyer than the embellished account in his 1999 autobiography, A Charge to Keep. In that book, he says he flew with his unit for the next several years, which also turns out to be a little inflated. Another little bit of news here. The U.S., this is from the Miami Herald. Of course, it's all over the websites and news. A radio station in the Middle East reports that Osama bin Laden, Iranian Republic of Iran broadcast, this is like the BBC of Iran. It's called IRIB, Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting Service, announced that from a very reliable source, and two sources, actually. One was a reliable source, and the other was a man with close links to intelligence services and Afghan tribal leaders, that Osama bin Laden not only has been captured, but has been being held for some time. Here's the actual quote. The capture of the al-Qaeda leader has been made sometime before, but U.S. President George W. Bush is intending to announce it when the American presidential election is held. End quote. Interesting times we live in, eh? Interesting times. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. I'm sorry. I'm on autopilot. That's the old number. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Jane in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's
Hi.
Up?
Can you hear me?
I can. You're live and on the air.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask a question some time ago about a speech that Greenspan made in before the Chamber of Commerce in, I think it was in Iowa or Omaha or somewhere. And he was talking about a conceptual education and conceptuality in economics as opposed to tangible products. And I wanted to know exactly what he meant. How can you have conceptual things instead of tangible products?
Well, if I teach you how to do trigonometry, have I given you a concept or a product?
Well, I don't know whether it's a concept or a product. If you're going to teach me math, is that a concept or a product?
It's a concept. I mean, it depends on how you're defining it and for what purposes. I mean, if you're defining it for the purposes of saying, okay, have we actually delivered a concept, and then we consider the delivery of that concept you'd have to go back to the context. It's the funny thing about the English language. A lot of words have meaning only in the context in which they're used.
Well, I know, but it's a very difficult thing to understand when you want to talk about teaching education, math or English or art or anything. So you're teaching the concept of English and art and math and what have you. And then they're talking about the concept of economics. Well, economics can be turned around all kinds of ways.
Oh, sure. Sure.
So if that's a concept, anybody could put up a concept that they want in economics, which is what Bush is doing with his wealthy tax cuts.
Yeah, his voodoo economics, to quote his father.
Well, I like that better. I think concept is voodoo economics.
Yeah. Well said, Jane. Well
yeah,
said.
Okay, thanks well, a lot. And I wanted to make sure I had the right number to call.
Yeah, you did. And I always it's always nice to hear from you, and I'm glad that you're still. I'm assuming you're listening on KTRC there in Santa Fe?
Yes, and I don't understand why they took some of the other talk shows off and put some crazy ones on there that I was listening to. I think that was Peter Collins, I think, they took off. And I don't know, they have something where they're talking all about what's happening on in the Congress and what the president is doing.
Yeah.
And I know all about that. I don't need to have them tell me that. What you're telling me is what's factual, and they're not doing it. So
I'm glad you
have a new number.
Thanks.
And it wasn't no number at all.
I'm glad you're still here, Jane. Some of the programs simply went away. I know Peter B. Collins is still around, but I can't speak to the programming decisions that are being made.
No, but I think they're on web, but they're not on KRTC. Maybe I have to talk to Fred Cerna, huh?
Yeah. Actually, I think the bottom line is if you can find an advertiser for a show, talk to local folks who might advertise, and that'll bring it on. Jane, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894. And Carrie in South Carolina was on the line there, and Carrie has dropped off. You want to call back, feel free. You never know. I mean, maybe you got... Carrie ran out of steam, or sometimes the phones just hiccup, and people vanish. So has bin Laden been caught? Well, by coincidence, at the same time that the Iranian news service is announcing that he's been caught and that, to quote them, the capture of the al-Qaeda leader was made sometime before, but Bush is intending to announce it when the American presidential election is held. At the same time that the official news agency of Iran is saying this, we get this from the you know, the, from the mainstream news. In fact, there was a CNN was reporting on this about today. Now that spring has come, they were saying. Now that spring has come, the weather's a little better. We can resume the search for Osama bin Laden. Resume? Well, the snows are melting in the mountain area where he's hiding out. Well, weren't they melting a year ago? Well, but a year ago we had to go after after Saddam. And why? Well, because he had weapons of mass destruction. Well, but he didn't. Well, but he was involved with terrorism, but he wasn't. Well, he was a bad guy. Well, he's so is Robert Mugabe. He's killed a million of his own people. So are the dictators of China, who have killed 3 million people just in Tibet. Well, we don't want to talk about that. We'd rather just, stand tall and steadfast. You know, it's there's key words, by the way, you're going to hear in the election coming. Start noticing them. These magic words that will be coming out of the Bush administration. Anyhow, as the weather begins to improve, this from the Miami Herald, along the Afghan-Pakistan border, the U.S. and Pakistani forces are intensifying their hunt for Osama bin Laden, his top lieutenant and the former Taliban ruler, U.S. officials said this week. This is going to spawn a zillion conspiracy theories when they get this guy. Just like, you know, okay, we found Osama, and he was in a hole that he didn't have the ability to get out of. Somebody else had to put him in and let him out, which makes him seem like he wasn't hiding, that he was a captive. And then you had the Kurds, the leader of the Kurds, coming forward and saying, yeah, we captured him, we tortured him, we interrogated him, we got what we want out of him, we held him for a month or two, and then we handed him over to the Americans. And they sat on him for a while until they decided that it was appropriate, you know. And you know, some people are going, oh, come on, you know, this is just nonsense. No, we caught him, and... but he did look kind of stoned when he came out, didn't he? He had that kind of, you know, Rush Limbaugh look on his face. Anyhow, so officials spoke on the condition of anonymity. I'm sorry, cheap shot at Rush. You shouldn't pick on drug addicts when they're down. Officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because the operations are highly classified. They said U.S. reconnaissance satellites were redirected this week. Redirected! It has been 889 days since we began the search for Osama bin Laden. But today, this weekend, they started. Reconnaissance satellites were redirected this weekend to spend more time over areas near Pakistan's South Waziristan region, where Pakistani forces recently have clashed with what appear to be heavily armed members of Al-Qaeda or Taliban military. And they go on to note, with Saddam Hussein now in U.S. custody, bin Laden's whereabouts are the Bush administration's most important mystery in this election year. Yes, an unsolved mystery, to say it charitably. You see where a group of people in the anti-war movement are going to sue George Bush and Tony Blair? I thought this was interesting. This from ABC Online. ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. This isn't being published in the United States, but this is official news in Australia. ABC in Australia. I've been a guest on ABC in Australia several times, in fact. And ABC is the nationwide network. I mean, it's every little town you can hear ABC News, Australian Broadcasting Corporation. It is the network. And this from ABC Online. A coalition of groups opposed to the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq says it intends to take legal action for mass murder against British Prime Minister Tony Blair and U.S. President George Bush before the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Chris Coverdale, a spokesman for the Stop the War Coalition, said, "What has happened is the mass murder of 20,000 or so Iraqis. We have to ensure that Bush and Blair and all the others associated with that decision to attack and kill Iraqis are held to account for it." End quote. And the coalition, and then the ABC goes on to note, the coalition's decision coincided with mounting pressure on Mr. Blair to explain the basis on which the country went to war. Well, frankly, you know, I don't think this is going to much fly in the United States. The folks in the United States, they have so successfully turned Saddam Hussein into Lex Luthor, into a Hitler kind of figure. I mean, when you think of what Hitler did and compare it to what Saddam did, Saddam was nothing. I mean, he was a small town piker who was under control. His army had been bombed into smithereens. His own people were plotting against him. He was nothing. He had a couple of sadistic wacko sons, and but we have so vilified him, particularly with the 300,000 Shiites, or somewhere between 100,000 and 300,000 Shiites that he killed in the south of Iraq. The right always forgets to tell you that he did that in response to George Herbert Walker Bush telling them at the end of the Gulf War that they should rise up against Saddam and he would support them. And then when they did rise up against Saddam, he failed to support them and Saddam went in and slaughtered them. But in any case, we have so turned Saddam in the minds of Americans into a mass murderer, which he was, that I think anybody saying, well, you know, we killed 20,000 Iraqis without a good reason, cluster bombs and bombing and whatnot, which is true, and I think it's a tragedy, and it never should have happened, and I absolutely agree with these folks. But I don't, you know, I think the American public is so brainwashed that this thing is not going to fly. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. And Robert in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How you doing, Mr. Tom?
I'm alive and kicking. I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Robert?
Well, pretty good. I like listening to your show there. I see you didn't change your number. I said, man, I got the wrong number. I kept dialing 1-800-TALK.
Yeah, we've changed networks, as it were. We're on it. We're actually beaming down off a different satellite. Although you're listening to satellite.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're still there.
As long as you stay on Sirius.
Yeah, we're still there. Still will be. It's a great.
I just got a question there.
Yes, sir.
Where if they do have Osama bin Laden, what are the United States going to do then? Because we know once you get one dictator, another will rise again.
Yeah, well, that's already happening. I mean, you know, in terms of practical, you know, what's good for America, what might stop terrorism and all that kind of thing, whether you got Osama is almost irrelevant. The guy is hiding out in a corner of Pakistan where he has probably very little influence. The problem is that the way that Bush has conducted this whole thing, by alienating so much of the world rather than bringing them into a coalition, And by having people like General Boykin talk about our God is better than their God, you've got Muslims all over the world absolutely convinced, unfortunately, that this is we're on some kind of holy war. You know that this is an anti-Islam thing, and it's spawning more terrorism and more terrorism and more terrorism, and the consequences of that are going to be really dangerous for America. Robert, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman, exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mother, Mother Ocean, I have heard you call, wanted to sail upon your waters since I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all, you've seen it all. Watch the men who row.
And welcome back. You're in the middle of the real free speech zone. This is Tom Hartman, and Iraq driving blind. The administration charged hundreds of miles into Iraq with a plan for war, but no plan for post-war Iraq, and no discernible strategy for the June 30th transfer of power, says Ayatollah al-Sistani. Before I continue, I just want to tell you that our program today was produced here in Vermont by Louise Hartman,
engineered, you know, running our automation equipment, learning our automation equipment by Louise Hartman. Phones answered by Louise. I've been running the board and answering the phone. And thanks to Brad Walrod in New York City for helping out with the music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Special thanks to Shelby at radiopower.org for getting our stream up. If you're hearing the stream, you're listening to it from radiopower.org, even though her website has crashed. It will hopefully be back tomorrow. And thanks also to Dane Scott of Tune Tracker 2, who gave us a remarkable program that allows this program to stay on the air. So, having said all that, back to the proverbial rant here. This lack of planning and the subsequent chaos, this is from the Center for American Progress, could have ominous repercussions for Iraq. The likelihood of impending strife was foreshadowed by threats from Sistani this week. I mean, this could get very serious, my friends. I mean, they talk about pray for peace in the Middle East. This is... Sistani warned Germany's Der Spiegel magazine. Now, have you seen this in the American press? I haven't. But here, I mean, this is all over the international press that a religious uprising is possible if his demands are not met. Iraq could be in big problem, in big trouble. It's time for a change. We need somebody competent running this country. Hopefully we can make it happen in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Furthermore.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.